Okay, it's 5:30 at night. It's Sunday. And it's a normal run off to the craft site for another week. Let's see what's going on here. I've got one thing of water, I forgot the other. But that's life. Okay. Oh. Coming on to the first week of February 2022. Keeping things going. Work-wise, it's the 10th anniversary of the Big Erie Escape. Up on the ebook and the printed book are available from Amazon. All the chapters from it are freely available on my website as well. Guess I'm not talking. I should talk, but I'm not. Huh. It's probably gonna get really cold tonight. Oh, I gotta tell you my bedroll. Bought a bedroll right around couple of months ago, December, and it's been doing really well, much better than my old setup of having two kind of backpacking sleeping bags, one for the top half of me, one for the bottom half of me, which worked fine last year. This week we're going to get down into the single digits of Fahrenheit temperature, so we're going to be doing a good test of it. It's supposed to be good down to 0 degrees. It's interesting to wake up sometimes and have the outside of my bedroll covered with frost. That's interesting. People always get worried for me because, of course, my boat isn't insulated. I don't really, you know. The point of the boat was not to be able to be warm in it. Everybody thinks it's like a house. And they go, no, it's like a tent. Just a tent I don't have to put up and take down all the time. And I don't have to worry about it being torn apart in the wind. Like my greenhouse got torn apart when it got too windy. Although I think I've solved the greenhouse problem, it's doing fine. Although it's covered now with an industrial tarp, therefore there's no light in it. I store things in it now. Had to strip quite a bit out of the boat. To give room for my bed. Nice memory foam. And quite comfortable. Shakes a bit when the winds are really buffeting it. But it keeps out the rain, and we had a lot more rain than normal this last year. Elements, the snow, the wind. And like I said, not insulated on any level whatsoever. What you have a bedroll for? But it does protect from the worst of the wind, which is a big deal. Wind chill ends up being one of the worst situations. I have to be a little worried about significant snow, like coming up this week on a Wednesday. night, Wednesday morning, there's a chance of snow. So I'm, Lisa's authorized me, but I think I'm going to pay for it with my own money, so it should be a big hassle for her. But I'm probably going to get a room in town, because if it snows too much, I really can't get out of the craft site. That's never a big problem, because at most I overnight just one night, and like I said, you know, the snow always melts during the day. Sufficient to go back into town to get out of the craft site. An acre that cost you $1,500 is known for having fantastic roads, getting, you know, having somebody come and scrape dirt roads, that doesn't happen. Like that. You don't treat it like, oh, no, I live out there, and no matter what happens, it's okay. I don't have a vehicle that you can treat like that, you know. My vehicle's made for getting good gas mileage, and it's really low slung, and it's accustomed to getting beat up down dirt roads, but that's not, certainly not what it's designed for. So yeah, Tuesday night, I'm going to go down to, I'm just going to take a look. There's some snow possibilities at Tucumcari, but not really where I am. So I may not have to stay the night in town. If we get a dusting of snow, it doesn't really matter. If it rains, I take another route to get to work. It's a little bit longer, a little more out of the way, but it's safer. Prophecy. If there is a trilogy, it is the middle book of the trilogy. The last book of the trilogy, I know it's like it's totally out of it's totally out of sequence. These are different stories taken from different times. The first one I did of the Nibigiri series, the before I was in the Big Erie series was called Godsend, and it's about 22 years old now. Actually, 24 years old. Golly. Because I finished it in 1998. Kind of a little bit of an adventure book. More than anything else. The next planned book after that was Prophecy, the one I'm working on now. But after I pretty much sketched out that book, and it pretty much runs the same way. Now my writing style is different from year to year. That's normal. Consistency is not my great thing. Anyway, I decided to write an earlier book called Escape, which is kind of an introduction to the world that these stories live in. And that's what's celebrating its 10th anniversary now, and that I'm offering, you know, on selling on Amazon, available as kind of a chapter book of a bunch of chapters on the on my own website for free. What else? Anyway, so yeah, and people go, well, you know, you could have done an order, and you go, no. It says not, and it was not planned to be done the way it's been done. Really got kind of a kick out of writing Escape. It's very much a different sort of book. And I don't know if Prophecy is going to go the way that it's going. It was built much more on a framework. Escape is very much I just wrote it chapter by chapter. I really didn't know where it was going to end up. And it turned out pretty good, I think. Like I said, I really kind of enjoyed it. And I'm afraid that people, when reading Escape, will say, oh, well, now I really want to read Godsend. And it's going to be sad because Godsend really isn't written in the same style at all. Much more traditional book. Escape is much more kind of fun and philosophy kind of mixed together a little bit. Really enjoyed it, like I said. And I've started Prophecy, which is the book I'm in the middle of now, or in the starting again with. I've really written big chunks of it in the past, but always got kind of not accomplished it again. You know, just because you've written books doesn't mean that writing the next book gets any easier. In fact, I go back and I read some of my stuff and I go, where did this stuff come from? Who is this guy that wrote this? I know it's me, but it's not like, you know, it's not like I don't know how to describe it. Anyway, so yeah, Prophecy is probably my most structured writing that I've ever done, and I'm kind of worried about it because I've never done structured writing very much before. Short stories, you don't have to do a lot of structuring. Godsend really kind of was. Kind of just going by chapter and letting the story kind of unfold before me. I've already got the chapters. I got it all lined out already. It's not... The problem with structured is that you don't want to play around with it too much. So the fun things I would do, as I just be riding along, and I go, you know what, this is getting a little dark, it's getting a little deep, I want to go off and have some fun. The more structured book, it doesn't happen like that. So those who might have read Escape and said, oh, I really like Nemro's writing style, this next one is styled like Escape. I started a version of Prophecy, which was very much like Escape, almost after I finished Escape. Very far. So it's almost tempting not even to try. Go ahead, do the structure. Write like most writers write. And I don't mean by being marketable, I mean just saying, okay, I've got planned out each step of the way, what's gonna happen and how it's gonna go. I've got it pictured in my head and I've got notes written down for every chapter on what it's supposed to do and what it's supposed to look like. Tie-ins to the other books, not huge ones, but little ones. Take place in the same basic venue. But, it's almost like they're being written by different people. I wrote them all. You know, this is my creation, but, like, in Escape, me as the narrator ends up being the dominant voice. Which is a little out of sync. People get kind of weird about that. You know, it's not unheard of, but it's just, you don't see books written like this very often. The last book is really written from the standpoint of Davor, which is a young character in Escape, youngish, is an old man. In Godsend, and is one of the main characters in Prophecy. In some ways, all the stories are the stories somewhat of a family. But they aren't particularly cohesive stories. It isn't like, oh boy, you know, this one ended on this note. Now, I'm ready for the next chapter. And you go, well, I'm ready for the next book. And you go, there isn't a next book. It just picks up the story where the last one left off. Like, the time period, they're always about 18 years apart because it always focuses on the next generation. So, Escape focuses on the generation of Melisenda and Davor. The second book is a little more focused, not precisely, because all of the generations are somewhat tied up in this in Prophecy. Although Prophecy starts and pretty much runs. It doesn't do a wide scale, you know. I will always tell you that I'm kind of a vignette writer. I don't write a strong, clear narrative all the way through the book. You know, I can't even say it's about character development. You know, Escape is really about how God affects people. And it just happened to be the story of how God affects mostly Melisenda. Davor is almost comic relief. In this next story, you know, in Prophecy, it really ends up being it's much darker. Instead of going through Melisenda's graduation from the Convocation School and her kind of realization of something going on in the larger culture of the Convocation. The second book really has to do with a problem that has to be solved and how God chooses to do it. often without giving.
But this is typical, you know, since God's going to be the same as he always is. God isn't going to give you all the pieces. You know, he's not going to lay the whole thing out, and here's how it's going to go, and here's what you're going to do. There's just a little bit here, a little bit there. You're usually given enough information to get to motivate you to do something out of your comfort zone. And hopefully that develops your faith to the point to where you're willing to do something larger. This happens with some of the characters. Some of the characters, frankly, fall. Some just disappear from the story partway through because they're just not germane to the story anymore. It's like they simply walk away from it, and they're just not part of that story anymore. And I don't know how people feel about that kind of thing. What happened to this character? And you go, you know, write a couple of sentences and say they just kind of vanished. And they decided not to be a part of what was going on, so they're not part of what's going on. They walk away from the covenant. I think it really has a ton to do with the covenant. Not just those who have taken the covenant upon themselves, but those who are allied with the covenant. Davor and Melisenda, and frankly, Westland, as far as I'm thinking now, they never actually take upon themselves the covenant of Waykeep, really the only extant covenant among the people of the Aleth. The Aleth, not the Aleth. The children of Eladius and Cassandra. They're just, it's just, you know, they are so distant from God, and there only ends up being one covenant to try and keep hold things together, and that's the covenant of Waykeep, to protect the people from being destroyed by outside forces. And to be honest, that really comes from a much earlier story, which is not fleshed out at all. It was supposed to be part of a book called The 4 Days in After Years originally, when this was all first kind of broken up into the pieces it's broken up into now. It talks a lot about, it isn't so much about Eladius and Cassandra. It really has more to do with their children and how they are. Trecheian, Saradio, Kiami. And their lives, their generation, and of course Sabra, who is an outsider, that really is the thing that instigates the covenant, that outsiders will be kept out. Of course, that doesn't save anybody from falling away, but it's kind of what Kiami came up with. God has his own agenda running. We see it most vividly in the ship's salvation and the bringing of righteous-ish people that show righteous promise to Waykeep, to fortify Waykeep. Waykeep ends up being the real kind of citadel of godly people. and to a large extent, they're kept that way by the labor that they were set to generations before, and that the covenant that they make and the covenant that they continue to remake over and over again, it's what sustains them in righteousness, and it's tricky. Prophecy really ends up being a real trial of waking. Anyway, so that's kind of what's going on that one. And yeah, I've also, man, I need to make prophecy a little more playful, like Escape was. Then I come back and it's like, you know what? No. It was never originally planned to be fun at all. It was supposed to be somewhat dark. God Sent is a story on a few levels of redemption. For a lot of the characters in it. Escape, like I said, is just an introduction. It's almost kind of a fun one. It's light. But yeah. Prophecy was always seen as dark and many characters fall. It is a great testing, and a reasonable amount of those being tested fail the test, and it's supposed to. I had always kind of seen it as an analog to most of life. You know, people fall. Now, some characters are redeemed in God's sense. A lot of the characters, well, like I said, a lot of the characters flow through all three. Some characters are only in two books. And you see them from different standpoints. You know. It's almost like you're seeing the lives of this group of people, but you're seeing them through the eyes of almost different authors. And those authors have just a different style. And so, yeah, you know. Prophecy is based on the Mariner's Log, which was actually not always called the Mariner's Log. It was integrated into Navigiary, ultimately, from a little piece of inspiration I got from the Lord. I remember it was in Las Vegas, New Mexico. I was sitting there. I was sitting in the was at Wendy's, the drive-thru at Wendy's in Las Vegas. It could have been Wendy's, it could have been McDonald's. No, it wasn't McDonald's. Whatever's behind McDonald's, I think it might have been Wendy's. I don't think it was Burger King. It doesn't matter. Anyway, and came up with the plan of salvation in 10 simple symbols. And that was ultimately renamed into the Mariner's Log, because that's what the name, that's what the word, which is a made-up word, navigiary, stands for. It is a navigation log. It's a navigation diary. That's why it's called navigiary. But, you know, and it's kind of fun because the word doesn't exist. If you type it into a search engine like Google, the only results you're going to get are my books on the subject, which is always good to have. Everybody thinks it's a word that you can just look up, and you go, yeah, you can look it up if you want to. But this is all you'll get because it's more of a title than anything else. Anyway, and the framework of prophecy, the book, which I need to go ahead and just surface better. It doesn't need to be hidden. That's something that people say I'm really bad about as a writer, is that I don't just hold on to my secrets and let people figure them out later. Someday, maybe, you know. No, I'm pretty overt. If there's a way I want to do it, so it all of a sudden kind of becomes almost a religious study guide to God's plan of happiness. And it's a good thing I don't call it the plan of happiness, because out of the back side of this, you'd say, boy, this doesn't cause happiness for very many people at all. And you go, well, I said, if you put forth the effort that it indicates, if you do what it says to do, you can very much be among those with the highest reward, the highest glory, the most joy. But then again, it does talk about the people that don't do that, the people that are left. And there really is kind of a left behind sort of vibe to it. Because it is. Ennis, one of the characters, has a problem to solve. There has been a great abandonment by many people of the covenant in Waikiki, and he is presented with the problem that they don't have sufficient people to guard the mountain pass. Keep the way, as they say. And how is this going to get resolved? And the resolution is to go among the Aled, the people in First Home, and collect new people. Salvation, the boat, will typically bring one or two people at a time to Waikiki. At this point, that's going to be insufficient. So, decide that they're going to go among the Aled and try to bring out people who can, who are willing to take upon themselves the covenant. This was actually from the very old times, when things fell apart on First Home among the children of Eladius and Cassandra. Things went badly. Leadership went badly. Sarandio, the queen, who is righteous, died. You get the impression that she was killed. Or of something. I have this all written down in notes. And, you know. And within one generation, the Aled were mostly had nothing to do with God anymore. Abandoned Eladius and Cassandra's faith, the daughters of Sarandio became the original women corrupted by Sabra, the outsider. And Kiami established Wakey. Brought out all the people who were still righteous and still willing to follow God. And established the Wakey community. And its basic thing was to at least prevent more outsiders from coming into the lands of the Aled lands, for lack of anything better to call them. Oh, I'm supposed to get off here. Let me go ahead and get between all these trucks, because I really do not want to be on the interstate for this whole trip. I'm not a fan of the interstate. Although, to be honest, if I'm on the interstate, something bad happens to me. I at least have I can get emergency services. I can get saved. The car worked on. If I go the back way, which I much prefer, and I'm taking, I don't know how ready emergency services will be. I may just be stuck somewhere waiting for somebody to come and find me. But we'll take the chance. We'll take the chance. Anyway, so. Wow. They're getting all the stuff pulled together to close the road if they need to. Wow. I think we're getting ready for the storm. Supposed to be coming through this week. I'm going to miss it because I'm just not going to be here. Well, the gas prices in Santa Rosa, which used to be pretty good, they are now almost as bad as Socorro. Which is sad, very sad. Anyway, so I think what we're going to do, now I had already written what I would consider the prelude, but it's probably going to end up being chapter 1,
because I think we need an actual prelude. And the prelude's going to be almost an historical text, little snippet about Kiami. Fall of the children of Eladius and Cassandra. And the and the establishment of Waykeep and the actual covenant. I think we can just start out with, and here is the covenant of Waykeep. I'm gonna have to work on that a bit, and that's the way we're gonna kind of walk into it. And the real symbol of the covenant itself is the Mariner's Log. Now it happens to be on a monolith carved in stone and set on the beach as a marker to the trail that leads to Waykeep. Set there by Kiami himself and the first group that had come. Because God said, you need to mark the way so that I can send more to replenish you. Tough thing. The second or third chapter, probably the second, is actually the story of defending the path. Is an event in defending the path, and it is an indication of how many people were lost. It was an indication of how many people. In this case, it's very strange because it's an indication also of those who just said, we're tired and we're not doing this anymore. You know, the covenant is an old fable. It's just words. We were taught as children to do this stuff, you know, and it ends up being a real indication of different sorts of people. Like right now in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Now this isn't specific to the church, but it's just as evident there as it is anywhere else. Christianity's facing the problem. I think all faith groups are seeing the fact that that a lot of the young people are not following the ways of their parents, and this is kind of almost an indication of this. There are, in any community, especially a religious community, there are stalwarts that are true believers. There are some people that just do it because it's what they've always done. And
And that's kind of an old way of approaching it, I guess. A traditional way of approaching it. And you'll have a certain number of people that just do it because this is what you do. You know, it's like every Sunday I go to church and I listen to the pastor. You know, I may take a nap. You know, but are they going to be in that community? Are they going to stay in that community? And they do. You know, they're the true believers. There are just the people who keep doing it because they're kind of cultural, and that's why you culturally do things. And just like today, there is a growing group of people who for various reasons, sometimes selfish, sometimes more intellectual than spiritual, they're deciding that they're walking away from these things. Lots of walking away. That's why when people say, oh, I'm walking away from like the Democratic Party, for instance, and you go, well, thank you for not deciding to be a socialist. But it isn't very informed. It isn't very you really don't know if they have good reasons or if they're actually going to go in a good way, or if they're just deciding that they don't want to have anything to do with a way that looks destructive, and they're going to go their own way. And that's probably the great mantra of our times right now, is too many people, or a lot of people, going their own way, and that this is to a large extent problematic. Just because they are leaving something that traditionalism would find distasteful doesn't mean they're going to unite with the good guys or your group or whatever. It doesn't mean it's going to happen. It just means they walked away from the other guys. One doesn't know what they're really after. So, and of course, the second chapter is all about a group led by a man and his family that are walking away. And they don't end up walking away to anything, they just leave. They are a feature of Godsend, so I don't think I'm giving away a lot of plot lines. Say that, yes, this is called his father, his father is Kevin, and he's they're just really going out. I mean, they're doing what needs to be done to survive, but it's really not anything in the line of, you know, we decide to go away from Waykeep because we think it's evil and unrighteous. We're going to go off and form our own group that is more righteous. It wasn't like that. They were just leaving because they were tired of what was being asked of them. And they got enough people to make it so that the defense of the past became untenable. Of course, the whole thing is one does not know when the next potential invasion is going to be tried through the past. Sometimes it's years. Sometimes it's only months. And, anyway, so, there's more to it, but, of course, this isn't the place to talk about it. It's like, oh, I don't want to do spoilers. And you go, dude. So there's nothing to it. I have no readership. Nobody's interested in this. Well, to be honest, I've never really been able to market. I really have no great sense for marketing. It would be wonderful if some enterprising person said, hey, man, for, 10% of the take, I will market this. And it would be like, great, please do it. Yes, you can get 10% of the take? So, yeah. You know, Amazon already takes, 50-60%? And you go, well, God, it only leave you with, 30, maybe 25. And you go, you know what, 25 is something a whole lot better than 100% of zero, which is how much money I've made from all this writing. Zilch. And to be honest, it may not really be about the money. And I think I've reconciled to that over the years, that it's not a big deal. I still put it out there. I still could make money off of it if I would ever put forth any effort at all in marketing. Anyway, so yes, it is darker in that some of the good guys don't win. They die. Some of the people that you like fall. And you really do. I said, I would not be surprised if most of the people that read the book and got to the end said, this is terrible, I hate this book. Why? It's just because it wasn't the end of the story at all. And you go, no, there's no end to the story. At least to life. Ones that try to make life happen. Now, can I tell you, the whole premise of the story and its basic arc, which is Ennis going to replenish the numbers to reinvest Waykeep, that is accomplished. That happens. But, as is normal, individual people will make their own individual choices. And those individual choices are upsetting, oftentimes. It's very sad. It's very sad. Like I said, Godsend, which was the very first book written, and the one that's been out there the longest, is celebrating its 24th? It's 24 years old. Redemption, and can I be honest, it's redemption for some of the characters in Prophecy. A lot of the characters who seem to fall and have a problem and go on the wrong side of things. It is redemptive. So I don't want you to get too sad. would be like, what would you do if you told, if you made fictionalized stories based on the lives of Book of Mormon characters, Bible characters, how they, you know, little snippets of their life. And can I be honest? I see the Bible very much as little chunks of this. Now, the Bible was written by a lot of people with a lot of different purposes. Some of it almost seems like a story and written in story form to a certain degree. Some of them are trying to be verbatim recording of the words of prophets, certain prophets, some of them are purely historical, you know, the Book of Kings, the Book of Samuel, kind of smells a whole lot like, you know, and when you say Chronicles, and you go, that's almost kind of what it smells like. It smells like the Chronicles of Jewish kings. Roughly chronological, but also kind of gathered together more like, oh man, yeah, I don't know what that is. Anyway, so it doesn't upset me that the books are going to be really different. The stories around Godsend are very action-adventury because they're very action-adventury. There's some definite peril in there, a little bit here, a little bit there, you know, so it kind of reads that way, and kind of cool. Action at all, because that's just not what the life of a girl in the convocation school is not adventurous, and that's really what we're kind of seeing there. You know, the most adventure that happens is Davor getting clunked in the head with a piece of with a metal plate, and that's probably about the most action you're going to see in the thing. Godsend is a whole different, and prophecy, you know, a prophecy is probably going to be like, oh God, this thing reads like the Bible. A little bit. You go, well, I'm not going to sit here and try to be biblical about things particularly. There's going to be little chunks of it. And there will be little snippets out of the scriptures. scripture, the Alan, mostly the writings of Keanu that keep popping up. And it really has to do with the Mariner's Log and the different symbols on it and what they represent and what we're supposed to learn from it and the kind of people that we end up being and what our ultimate fate will be given the kind of people that we are during a period of testing. And that's really what prophecy is, and it does. It just is like, well, what? Man? So it will almost read like kind of a religious commentary with a from a specific text and a story and some doings wrapped around that study. And that's it. And it is completely different from the other two books yet? Is it going to be fun? And you go, probably not. That's because it has an actual structured purpose, unlike the other stories. You know, so we'll see how that goes. Well, I'm just past Pastera on my way to Vaughan, and oftentimes I will have stopped the recording earlier than this, so this has gone a bit long, longer than normal, than I would normally do. And I'll put this in, and it's good. I'm glad I went over this because I was struggling with how the book was going, and I was wondering if I needed to do it the same way I did before, and I've come back to the realization that I probably should not, which is fine. So, talk to you later, and bye.